episode 560 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode, and I'm just briefly going to touch on three of the titles that are going to hit stands this coming Wednesday, October 24th. We've got a new number one from Steve Orlando, The Dead Kings. We also have the next volume of Baby Teeth starting with issue number 13 by Donnie Cates. And finally, we have The Beyonders, issue 3 from Paul Jenkins with art by Wesley St. Clair. All three are really, really good. And I just wanted to kind of give some thoughts. Spoiler-free, obviously, because the books aren't out yet. And I want you to be able to go out there and pick them up yourself and kind of get the experience without my spoiling it for you. And you know, it's always good for you to check it out yourself. So the first book I'm going to talk about is The Dead Kings from Steve Orlando. It's got art by Matthew Dow Smith, and letters are by Thomas Maurer, with colors by Lauren, I think it's Affe, is how you pronounce it, Lauren Affe. Now, what I found really interesting about this story, for those that don't know, Steve Orlando, his heritage is Russian. Now, I know next to nothing about Russian folklore and myth and, you know, folklore, fairy tales, whatever you want to call it. And so I found this kind of interesting in that you can tell it's rooted in those ideas and that, like, folklore and history of storytelling from that part of the world. And not knowing anything about it, a lot of that stuff kind of went over my head, so to speak. And that's not to say that I didn't appreciate it. And it did make me interested enough to wish that I knew more about it. Whether I'll have time to actually research it or not is another question entirely. But even though I didn't and don't know anything about that part of the world and their kind of folklore and history, it did give the story a certain flavor, and I really appreciated that. So without getting too into detail, because again, spoiler free, The Dead Kings is about a post-apocalyptic world where apparently there was a war, something you would consider a post-apocalyptic war, with these giant machines battling against each other. The war has ended. That wreckage has been strewn across this land. And as it happens, as life happens, we've seen new villages and towns kind of spring up within the wreckage of this war. So consider the war to be post-apocalyptic. Then this is even after that. So we're talking post-apocalyptic with the remnants of that military-industrial complex serving as a backdrop for the survivors of the war and people just trying to get on with their lives. And again, grown up in the shadows of this, the wreckage of these giant robots and war machines, and trying to make their way in the world where some of the remnants of that military have taken control of certain areas. And think of it as, I don't know, fascism unchecked, so to speak, right? Rules for the sake of there being rules, rules and structure that maybe were needed in times of war, but are now no longer needed and only exist to sort of further amplify themselves and choke out the freedom of those that live under this regime, so to speak, if it's even organized enough to be called a regime. So that's the sort of the backdrop and the setting that Orlando has created here with that flavor of this Russian history and folklore and myth. So it's somewhat bleak in the art and the colors. The art by Smith and the colors by Affe, which very much suit the story that Orlando's trying to tell of this bleak world. You know, it's Russia, so snow on the ground, dreary weather, all that kind of stuff. So it's, I'm wondering how much it's going to be a tale of redemption, as we have met one of us, a pair of twins. We've met Sasha, and his motivation seems to be to rescue his brother, Gina, from that very regime that I was speaking about. So how that's going to play out, we've yet to find out. Obviously, this is going to be a story that's going to unfold over the course of the series. And again, I'm very curious to see what are the themes that Orlando is exploring. Is it going to be exploring that idea of this fascist regime that's kind of in an echo chamber, so to speak, an echo chamber of a world that's only serving to amplify itself and keep itself sustaining? Or is it going to be the story of Sasha trying to rescue his brother, looking for redemption in a way, feeling guilty for having what he says is having abandoned his brother and mother at some point in the past? So it may be both, but I'm definitely intrigued. And I hope that Steve, and I expect that Steve will, but I hope that Steve kind of infuses more of that history and folklore and mystery of Russian stories and tales into this story that he's telling. Because again, I don't know much about that, but he has piqued my curiosity in this first issue. So anyone who's listened to the podcast for an extended period of time knows I'm a pretty big fan of Steve Orlando. I think he is a unique voice in comics. He doesn't necessarily structure story the way a lot of other writers do. And I think that's needed, you know, a diversity of voices, a different way of telling stories. And what I really, really am excited about to see with the Dead Kings is Steve's done some other creator-owned work before. I think Crude from Image, and I think he did a, I want to say he did a story over at Boom too, but I'm not 100% on that. But regardless, I haven't really read much of his creator-owned stuff. I'm a fan of his DC work. But keep in mind that, you know, and while that work is really, really good, it is working on established characters, characters that have existed for a long time. Even if Steve does kind of pride himself on looking for the diamonds in the rough over at DC, which do exist, you know, finding those weird, quirky characters and having a little more freedom to tell the stories he wants to tell, it's still within the structure and the mythos of that overall DC universe, right? So there's always a little bit of restriction on what he can do. Here at Aftershock, sky's the limit, right? He's completely untethered, no rules but the story that he wants to tell here in The Dead King. So I'm really excited to kind of see him sort of spread his wings, so to speak, and have the freedom to tell, you know, a story that's as out there as he wants it to be. So kudos to the entire creative team on The Dead Kings for an intriguing first issue. And they really, as I said, nailed the tone and the mood of the story Steve's trying to tell as far as the creative team goes. The art team, they did an incredible job. So can't wait for the second issue. Make sure you guys all get out there and pick up the first issue this Wednesday. There's a couple different covers that are really, really cool. And if you were lucky enough to be in Fayetteville this last weekend, they had an exclusive cover there. Hope you picked that up. So, all right, on to the next book I'm going to talk about. It's The Beyonders, number 3, from Paul Jenkins, with art by Wesley St. Clair and letters by Marshall Dillon. I really think Paul Jenkins and Aftershock are a match made in heaven. You know, my favorite Aftershock title of all time is Replica. It's by Paul Jenkins, which was just incredible. Still miss that series. It's so much fun. And his second series he did for Aftershock, Alters, which on the surface wouldn't necessarily be a book I would think I would be interested in, but was so excellently done by Paul and the rest of the creative team, that it was just as compelling and just as enjoyable as any other comic I've read from Aftershock. And so now we're on to his third series at Aftershock called The Beyonders, which, if you're not familiar with it, so think of all the different conspiracy theories throughout the world and throughout history, you know, disappearance of Amelia Earhart, the colony at Roanoke, just like anything you can think of, Illuminati, crop circles, alien abductions, all that kind of stuff, right? What if it really is not only all true, but also in its own way, all connected? So that's the story that Paul and Wesley and Marshall are telling in The Beyonders. So it's been a lot of fun. The first issue introduced us to Jake and Narneen, who are the main characters, but just briefly, right? Like, we kind of got the sense of the world and the tone that Paul wanted to tell, and really just got the briefest of introductions to these characters. And then issue two kind of gave us the backdrop. Like, okay, here we're dropping these characters into this organization now. We know there's actually two organizations, one that's kind of reminiscent of the Illuminati, just goes by a different name, and then the Beyonders, and that sort of Illuminati organization is called the Order. Then you have the Beyonders, who are the good guys, so to speak. If you think of the Illuminati as wanting to rule the world, the Beyonders want to find the answers, but they're not looking to rule or take advantage of the power. They're just looking to kind of shepherd humanity, and mostly they just exist to oppose the Order and make sure that they don't rise to any more power than they already have, right? So that's kind of the situation that we got in issue two, explaining the different factions and where Jake and Narneen fit into that. And Jake himself is somewhat of a savant when it comes to breaking codes and finding the answer. So that's why he's been recruited by the Beyonders. So with issue three, it picks up where issue two left off, with Jake kind of finding a good starting point for this mission that the Beyonders are going to go on to finally, like, break the code and find out the answers behind all these conspiracies, discover how they're all linked, and ultimately prevent the Order from taking over the world. So it's a lot of fun because Jenkins is taking these kind of real world conspiracies of crop circles and alien abductions and, you know, all the others I mentioned, and he's weaving them into the story and connecting all the dots of them just expertly well. And so it's a lot of fun to see a lot of these different theories kind of turned on their head. I mean, a lot of what he's doing makes total sense, but you wouldn't necessarily ever make the links or connect the dots the way that he's connecting them. And so, again, I think it's a lot of fun. He's always great at character, and the character of Jake is kind of our POV character, young enough to not be really worldly. And so it gives him a somewhat of a sense of innocence, but yet with his level of intellect, it really gives us Jenkins something to play off of for the rest of the characters, because it's very much a juxtaposition of character, right? This this guy whose intelligence allows him to make these intuitive, logical leaps to link these things together, and, you know, is just really smart, juxtaposed against this kind of lack of experience and somewhat naivete of the character. So he's a really interesting character, and I imagine we're going to see quite a bit of growth from Jake over the course of the series. So again, I'm really enjoying it. The art by Wesley St. Clair, a little bit more detailed than his previous work at Aftershock on Fujitsu, but still a loose enough style that you get a real sense of freedom and adventure in the story that comes across in Wesley's art. So I'm really, really digging this series. As I've read the last couple issues, I always find myself thinking, you know, I haven't read everything that Paul Jenkins has ever written, but based on the strength of story and how much I enjoy these stories that he tells, I tell myself this every time I read one of his books, like, man, I really need to go down and track, go track down some of the other stuff that he's written that I haven't read, because I'm sure I would enjoy it. I think he's just a really, really great writer and just really solid storytelling. So, and the other cool thing about Beyonders, I don't know if I've mentioned this previously when I talked about issue one or two, but there is a code in the Beyonders where if you can crack, you're going to win some huge giant prize. Like there's actually like a physical treasure out there somewhere that you can find if you can crack the code. I mean, each panel has a little symbol in it that means something or other. Like I guess you put all the symbols together and it spells something or gives directions. I'm not sure. I'm not the guy to break it. I imagine it'd be take pretty good dedication to break it. And I'm not sure at what point it's going to be able to be broken, you know? I mean, that's part of the code, right? Like maybe at some point there'll be a key in the story that's going to start to decipher some of these symbols. I'm just not sure, but I'll tell you what, it's a way to get a lot of value out of the issues of the Beyonders. So if you're a code breaker or naturally curious, I really encourage you. I can't wait till somebody breaks it and we get that story of how that person broke it down and what it all means. I look forward to that, almost like a mini story within a story. So definitely check out Beyonders number 3 out this Wednesday. And then the last book I'm going to talk about briefly is Baby Teeth number 13 from writer Donnie Cates, art by co-creator Gary Brown. We have colors by Mark Englert and letters by Taylor Esposito. So as I said, issue 13, starting off the next volume, probably volume 3 of Baby Teeth. And in the vein of like Rosemary's Baby or The Omen, it's the story of the devil's son. But really, it's the story of the family of Sadie, who's the young girl who gave birth to this boy, Clark, who supposedly is the son of Satan. And much like Donnie Cates does in a lot of his writing, he's really turned this trope on its head. You know, I really expected, I mean, you hear, you know, son of Satan and, you know, end of the world type stuff and Antichrist, and you immediately think biblical, like, right? Like, how can you not? That's where the roots of this story are. And so I was worried I was going to get hit over the head with all this religion, and this story is so far from that. It's been really compelling and great so far. And in this first issue of Volume 3, Cates has kind of turned everything on its head again as we meet the devil for the first time, and he's not at all what you would expect. And that's all I'm going to say about that part because I don't want it to be spoiled for you. What I will say is that we saw that Sadie and her family had a chance to go and rescue Clark and Clark's aunt, Sadie's sister, Heather, from the Red Realm, where they've been trapped for a little while due to previous events in the story. So that's where issue 13 picks up, in the Red Realm, and we get somewhat of an idea of just how dangerous it is. And what Sadie and Clark have been up to while they've been over there, and or Heather and Clark, rather, have been up to over there. And then Sadie and her father and their companions are reunited with Heather and Clark in this issue, which is great to see just how those family ties have remained strong despite their being apart for a little while. So again, Baby Teeth is not at all what you would expect. It's I almost would liken it to a Robert Rodriguez movie, like From Dusk Till Dawn, if you will. Like it's irreverent and it's, you know, kind of hard-boiled, foul-mouthed adventure where you can't help but root for these people that are in this incredible, impossible, nearly unimaginable situation, and they're facing it head on. Like, we're going to kick some butt. We're not going to take any prisoners. We're not going to take any crap from anybody. And we're going to be unapologetic about the fact that we care about each other as a family, and we'll do whatever it takes to survive. Even if that means, you know, fighting Satan himself, And not, again, in some kind of religious way, or, you know, say our prayers, or based in faith, you know, holding out crosses to fend off or ward off the devil. No, we're going to do it with punching and kicking and machine guns and just our own kind of unwillingness to fold in the face of unimaginable odds and beings that have great power. So it's a real cool mashup of these religious tropes and ideas with, as I said, just this kind of hard-boiled sensibility that Cates brings to the story. And Brown, I think his style of art can be very visceral. It's a little sketchy. It's a little messy, but it really encapsulates the emotion and the emotionality of the story that him and Cates are telling. And this wouldn't be the same series without his style of art. I just don't see that it would work as well. And Englert on colors has done an exceptional job of setting the mood all along, from kind of a more subdued palette in the beginning to kind of set the mood. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a horror comic, but it starts off and it kind of needs that sort of creepy aspect in the beginning as the story starts out, because, I mean, it is a story of a girl who is impregnated by Satan. So there is, you know, somewhat of a supernatural element to it. And as it's gone on and the story's evolved into more of this hard-boiled adventure, the color palette has lightened. It has brightened, so to speak. And in the red realm, lots of oranges, yellows, and reds, obviously. And Mark Englert has handled that really, really well. And when you have so much of the same color tones in a book, it can be hard to still set the mood. But Englert has done a great job of being subtle with these brighter colors to give us a good sense of the tone and the mood of the story going forward. So, and Taylor Esposito on colors, you know, he's a consummate professional, one of the nicest guys in comics. So of course he's killing it as well. So if there's any reason you're holding off from picking up Baby Teeth, cause like me, you thought, oh, religious book, Son of Satan, blah, 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 man, I would really encourage you, pick up issue 13. You may not completely understand why everybody is where they are in terms of their placement in the story, but I think you could pick up issue 13 on its own and read it and enjoy it. And if you do really enjoy it, then you can go back and pick up the trades from the first two. I really think it's worth reading. It's a really fun title. And, you know, Donny Cates, it seems like he's writing everything under the sun over there at Marvel, like Inhumans, Venom, has a Guardians of the Galaxy book coming out the first of the year. This is really a story like before he blew up over at Marvel. So obviously he's a pretty good writer if he's getting all this work at Marvel. So do yourself a favor and jump on this early story of his career before he took off at Marvel, and kind of see what all the fuss is about, so to speak, right? All right, everybody, I think that's going to do it for this episode. I really want to thank you all for joining. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Quick reminder, I will be at Los Angeles Comic-Con this weekend. I will just be there on Saturday, kind of walking around, doing some interviews, and always happy to meet listeners and talk about the show and hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard. Also, I will be on the Superman 80th anniversary panel, noon in, I think it's room 304. on Saturday. So hope to see you guys all there as well. So once again, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.